Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everybody, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity of National Review is back today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, as always, good news and bad news with our first two martinis, and as some might expect, a little bit different with our third today. But we'll get to that in just a moment, starting with the good martini. And, of course, you and I have been very happy ever since we really started the Three Martini Lunch to see how the American people responded to what's going on in this country, and especially the midterm elections. And now we're seeing another House seat that could actually end up in the hands of Republicans, which in the vacuum isn't necessarily that miraculous. But considering which House seat it is, could be absolutely incredible. This is the House seat vacated by Anthony Weiner after Twittergate, if you remember that earlier this year, with his contacts with a variety of women. He thinks they were all of age. Now, of course, September 13th is a special election to fill the remainder of his term. And right now, Republican Bob Turner is beating the handpicked Democrat there, David Weprin. He's got crossover endorsements from Ed Koch, the former Democratic New York City mayor, as well as an important state assemblyman in that area. This is a seat that a lot of folks just are fed up with Obama, even though it's a heavily Democratic district. So Democratic, in fact, that they didn't even want Weiner to resign at first. And the issue of Israel is apparently becoming a huge issue in this race. So, Jim, if the Republicans can pick up this one, this has got to be some serious handwriting on the wall for next year.
It does. And it's worth noting, it's kind of just a little bit of a further context of this coming Tuesday. There are actually two special House elections. The other one is in Nevada. It's in basically the congressional district that is basically everywhere in the state except Las Vegas. A moderately Republican district, and Democrats had some hopes for that earlier in the year. Democratic candidate is Kate Marshall, and it's not over, but early voting is looking very good for Republicans. Mark Amadei looks like he's going to be in really good shape. So there's one that hasn't gone well for the Democrats that they're hoping would be competitive. And then this one, which was as Democrat a seat as the Nevada one is Republican, you have the Republican candidate leading, which is kind of, you know, very surprising. Doesn't mean it's over. There's still a couple of days of this election. Bob Turner looks like he's running a very solid campaign. It sounds like David Weprin is making every possible mistake. Most notably, I think what kind of jumps out at me is that people call him the Scott Brown of New York City. And one of the things that kind of I remember in that in the Scott Brown race in January 2010 was that Martha Coakley had an ad that had this kind of awful use of 9/11 imagery. That when they were talking about Wall Street greed, they just happened to take a picture of the World Trade Center, which generally would not be most people's the image people connect with Wall Street greed. Well, now here is the DCCC running an ad on behalf of Weprin, which has a low-flying plane zooming towards Lower Manhattan. This is, you know, like 2 days before the 9/11 anniversary.
Yeah, great
so,
timing.
A weird echo of that one. It just kind of this feels like a snake-bitten Democratic campaign where nothing seems to go right. He's been skipping debates. He's been. They asked him what the debt was, and he said $4 trillion. Only off by $10 trillion. The New York Daily News, which is not a by no means a conservative newspaper, endorsed the Republican. We won't know until Tuesday night, but certainly a lot of bad omens for the Democrats. And the fact that it's a competitive race, if nothing else, is a kind of shot in the arm of confidence for Republicans.
Yeah, Bob Turner ran against Anthony Weiner, you know, back in 2010, and he was all excited because he actually cleared the 40% barrier, which tells you where the bent of that district normally is. So just being either neck and neck, and if there actually is a victory for Republicans there, it's a huge sign that even in the bluest of blue areas that that the Republicans are making inroads, not necessarily because they're beloved, but because the Democratic leadership is doing a horrific job. Speaking of which, the president of the United States gave his much-valued job speech before the joint session of Congress. And Jim, as always, he was very humble, very understanding of other people's positions, as he always does in his speech. He throws a straw man up there and explains how he understands their concerns in general, but he, of course, is more nuanced than them and understands what really needs to be done. Talking about, of course, how we got to do more construction projects. He's got specific bridges in mind.
High-speed rail. High I mean, if you had, you know, rail. Basically, if you went into it with a well-stocked drinking game, you may have cleaned up the bar. This is all very predictable stuff. We all saw coming. And at one point, Obama specifically said, as I have said many times before, well, gee, Mr. President, you made basically the, you know, this is a half the size of your stimulus proposal from 2009 that I think most people would say, either failed or drastically underperformed or dramatically did not meet expectations. And so, Greg, I don't mean to cut you off, but my first thought here is that, you know, we're a $14 trillion economy. You know, the American economy is diversified and all kind of stuff. We have 14 million Americans who are out of work. The idea that, you know, oh, here's some tax credits and oh, here's some federal grants. The idea that that's going to, really going to work on a scale large enough to start a hiring binge to take care of these 14 million people who've been out of work, I just find laughable. And it's kind of fascinating that Obama thinks these sorts of things are really going to have an impact when they are basically smaller versions of the ideas that have been tried before.
Exactly. And of course, he's pitching class warfare, basically, talking about he wants to put more teachers back in the classroom, how he wants more of these projects and all sorts of things. And of course, basically, if you dig down deep, it's a giveaway to the unions, basically. And he, of course, says it's fully funded, but since there's not actually a bill and was pretty vague on that. Pardon us, Mr. President, if we don't quite believe you, given your financial track record. And of course, he then trotted out, well, Republicans just want regulations reduced and taxes cut. And they're, yeah, that's pretty much what we want. And he says, well, you could have more tax breaks for the oil companies, or you could have teachers in the classroom. We can't do both. He says, we can either have tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires, or we can make sure our roads and bridges are resurfaced and refurbished. And then, of course, he has the audacity to say this.
This isn't political grandstanding. This isn't class warfare. This is simple math. This is simple math. These are real choices. These are real choices that we've got to make. And I'm pretty sure I know what most Americans would choose. It's not even close.
Yeah, they would say don't raise taxes, I'm pretty sure. The fact that people are actually laughing at him, I don't know if that's worse than you lie or what, Jim, but it's obvious that all this guy does is grandstand and participate in class warfare. The idea that anybody's going to actually believe that he's above it all like he always tries to portray himself as is really laughable.
Yeah, I think scoffing and laughter is a much better response than yelling out, you lie, even though I think the sentiment is the same. it's what we kind of expect from Obama. You know, that it's, he's going to say it's not class warfare while at the exact same time basically saying the tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires are why we're not in recovery.
Well, usually the third martini is our crazy one, outrageous one, bizarre one. We've certainly had a few of those this week. But given where we are on the calendar, this Sunday will be the 10-year anniversary of 9/11, and this will be our last podcast prior to that. Jim, in some ways, it seems like 9/11 was yesterday. It seems in other ways, given all that's happened since then, that it was a long time ago. But I still remember 10 years ago very vividly waking up. I was on a later shift at that time and seeing the World Trade Center with gaping holes and smoke billowing out. I remember rushing into work and seeing traffic literally at a gridlock. Some cars weren't even having their engines running, and just a look of dazed unbelief on the faces of everyone. And walking into the office, and the first images I saw on the TV after getting into work was the people covered in the soot and the ash from the collapsed towers, and just seeming so surreal, and getting through that day trying to sift out what was real and what wasn't, how many planes had been hijacked, all the casualty estimations, and just so many things flying around. And after an exhausting 12-hour day, probably even longer than that, going back across the Roosevelt Bridge back to Arlington, Virginia, and still being able to see the Pentagon in flames, just searing memories that will absolutely never be forgotten.
Indeed, Greg. I'm kind of it's strange because you kind of wondered if at the 10-year mark would the pain have faded? Would our memories be would our lives have moved on? And certainly life has changed in a great many ways. I think one of the things that this time of year always coincides with my older son's birthday. So thankfully, I have a very happy event right around this time of year, what otherwise could be a very depressing time of year. But something I came across a couple months ago and I've been holding on to. It's an ad for the World Trade Center in the mid-80s. It was running in magazines. I actually found this in the archives of Spy magazine. And it's just an ad to say, come visit the World Trade Center. And it talks about, ferry rides and foghorns, tankers and tugs, the skyline and the statue. And it just reminds me that in 1985, I was 10 years old and we went on a class trip to the World Trade Center. And I remember visiting it and we took pictures from the top. And just I marvel at the fact that an event that was, fairly mundane from my childhood, but I remember very vividly, will not be available to my children. I'm glad that we are making progress on the Freedom Tower. I'm glad that it's not just a hole in the ground at Ground Zero, but it just feels like a a strangely unfinished work there, and it is kind of a strange aspect to have something that was so iconic about New York not there. And I think that for all of us who grew up with the Twin Towers, the Freedom Towers, whatever moves on, it will always look wrong. And it's not to say that the architecture has not been fine. I think just something about it, we will look at it and say, it's not supposed to be that way. My only hope is I think about this as a father, that, you know, I haven't had the talk about 9/11 with my boys yet. And I think about, how do you explain a day like that? How do you make sense of something that didn't make any sense to us at the time? And I think even today doesn't make that much sense to us. How do you explain, you know, that men in a far off land with grievances we can barely understand could kill so many people over and how it could succeed, et cetera. So thankfully I have some time. I think most Americans still year by year, day by day, are trying to make sense of the day, and maybe this is something you can't make sense of. But it's kind of good that each year we remember, and you also remember that it's not just loss and tragedy. It is also, thankfully, wonderful heroism, and I think a sense of unified spirit. I think all of us probably wouldn't mind to taste a little bit more of that in these days to come. And hopefully, in light of the recent warning we had last night, hopefully everybody stays safe this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely right. Our thoughts and prayers go out to those who suffered losses, either personally or new folks that day. I think a lot of us did in the D.C. and New York areas. Certainly our thanks, again, as Jim mentioned, to the responders who were heroic, as well as just regular civilians who really helped out that day. And, of course, our thanks to the men and women of the military and their families for all they've done in the past decade to keep this country safe. Well, just an amazing country, and it's just a sobering anniversary, but a lot to be grateful for as well. Jim, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.